Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Screen Geeks Film Snob, Episode 3. This is Dave.
And this is Barry.
We've had a good beginning, a couple good movies to start off with, and this week we move on to Jean-Luc Godard's Contempt.
Yes, and that's Le Mépris for all you French people listening going, no, it is not contempt, it is Le Mépris. Okay, fine, you win. It's also Le Mépris, but it's in America, it's contempt.
It's like Parachutem. I don't want to hear an English translation of that. I want to hear what it's actually called. Dang it. Let's see here. It's made in 1963. It's probably most notoriously, or not famously known, I should say, for having Bridget Bardot.
Yep.
And she's amazing in it.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. I think she's her best performance, period.
Now, why did you originally watch this? This is an interesting story.
When I was considerably younger, I heard that this was the one movie that she was naked in. So I'm like, oh, okay, well, I got to rent this movie. So, you know, and I'm like, you know, don't worry, Mom. It's a artsy French movie. You know, this is a good classic film. Okay, Barry. So, you know, I throw it on.
It turns out that's the case.
Yeah, and it's certainly an artsy French movie. And, I mean, to just get off the bat and talk about the nudity, Godard shot this film, and we'll talk about the film itself, but the producer of the film, very much like the producer that Jack Palance plays in the movie, was an American douchebag, to use a French word.
Absolutely.
And a total jerk-off who told Godard that, you know what, you know, no one's going to like this movie. You really need to have Bridget Bardot be naked in your movie in order for this film thing to work. So Godard grudgingly shot this sequence with Bridget Bardot being naked. And the interesting thing about the scene is that it's one of the first in the movie. It's a very, very tender scene between a man and a woman, and they're both in bed. And rather than it being like some showy, sleazy nude scene, it's them talking. And basically the husband is complimenting his wife on the many parts of her body. So it's like the movie is deconstructing everything Bridget Bardot's body. And like it's basically like like addressing the nudity in the film, and it desexualizes the nudity and makes it into a thing of beauty and makes it into a moment between these two people rather than being something sleazy. And you know, it's the one scene in the movie where she's naked like that, and Godard gets it right out of the way, gets it over with.
There's another spot later near the end.
I think you're right. I think there was a brief moment.
But yeah. Here's the thing that's very we need to note is that, yes, there is quote unquote nudity, but not in a Rob Zombie kind of way, shall we say.
Sure. Yeah.
It's just her back. You don't see, you know, the goods, shall we say.
Sure.
And I you know, I really think that was a really cool that he did it that way, because he did make that opening scene just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was a very tender moment.
It is. It is. It's one of the most tender moments in the movie, because unfortunately the film does live up to its title. It essentially, it's a movie within a movie, but it's also about this deconstruction of this couple going through a really awful part in their marriage, and you basically see their marriage kind of break down during the course of the film.
And yeah, it's kind of in the same vein as like a Barton Fink or, you know, something like that, where it's about making a movie.
Absolutely. And I mean, to get right to the film references, I mean, this movie is highly influential. I know Quentin Tarantino has said that he's used images of the movie, certainly film within a film. There's a famous moment in Eyes Wide Shut where a camera literally turns and faces the audience dead on, and that's one of the opening shots of this film. And
during the credits, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Martin Scorsese himself has said that this is one of his favorite movies, and he's used the music from Contempt all throughout Casino.
Yes, that's right. I'd read about that too. Yes.
The George Delarue music is one of my favorite.
It's very interesting. Initially, beautiful. It was kind of like getting grating, because it essentially is the same song looped over and over and over, but it begins to take different meanings at different points in the movie.
Yes.
Some points it's a very beautiful song, at some points it's a very sad song, and it's the same exact notes. And you really have to give a commendation there for that.
Definitely.
It's funny. I called you after I saw this. I'm like, thank you for, you know, saying that we should do this movie. It was such a sad story. And you're like, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's shot so gorgeously.
Yeah, to me, it's such a beautiful film that I do forget how downbeat it really is. It really is a sad film. But I get so caught up in the movie within a movie, the immense visual beauty in every aspect of this film. It's so gorgeous. The performances, like Bardot really gives a very heartfelt performance. And Jack Palance, a very young Jack Palance, it's fun to see him.
He defines the term ugly American.
He's
really
a sleazy
does.
American producer, yeah. I mean, the plot, I guess we should mention, is essentially it's a film within a film. It's about how Jack Palance is producing a movie version of The Odyssey directed by Fritz Lang. Fritz Lang plays himself in the movie. This is Fritz Lang of Metropolis and M playing himself. So you see him, and they're all making this film. And essentially, Michael Piccoli plays this screenwriter who wrote the screenplay of this movie. And he's married to Bridget Bardot's character, this ingenue. And throughout the course of the filmmaking, Jack Palance is basically telling Piccoli to dumb down the movie, to make changes to the movie.
I think it was Fritz Lang's actual script, and he was brought in to do a rewrite.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And the real emotional gist of it is that Palance is making some serious moves on his wife, on Bardot, and that certainly leads to the disintegration of their marriage, and also the husband and the wife, they just don't deal with it very well, and not at all. And unfortunately, it leads to their ultimate downfall in a very shocking closing scene.
But it was a beautiful movie overall. I mean, it's very sad, but it's, you know, you identify with those characters, either in that you identify with them and what they're going through, or being, what the heck's wrong with you? You know, and anytime you can invoke either of those emotions, it really, you know, you it says something when a film hits you on an emotional level. And absolutely, it definitely did with me.
Yeah, yeah. There's a very long, very famous long mid-section sequence where you just got the couple in their house talking to one another. And, like, you see just, like, how they say things that are very human and understandable, but, you know, completely emotionally driven. And they say stuff that's, you know, you could understand them as a couple, even though it's like, okay, they're really misreading each other. They're jumping to conclusions. They're not really listening to each other. So it's painful to watch, also knowing that this is a reflection of what Godard was going on with his marriage at the time with Anna Karenina.
That's right, because it's been called a love letter to her.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting because Karenina has long, long black short hair. And at a point in the movie, Bardot actually wears a black wig. And that's a bit of a tribute to her. It's also a comment, interesting enough, on Cleopatra, which came out the same year, and Elizabeth Taylor wore the same hairstyle, of course, in Cleopatra. And, you know, if you know Godard, he's always, you know, more than happy to give a big, you know, F you, middle finger up to American crass, big, expensive commercialism. So that's like one of the many jabs in the movie against, you know, American filmmaking. But that's, you know,
You know what film that I can sitting here thinking about, a film that I think was very much influenced either directly or indirectly would have been American Beauty.
Definitely.
This movie hit you on an emotional level that they tried to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I definitely thought they did initially, but after seeing Contempt, you're like, no, this is actually how you do it.
And it's very stylized, like American Beauty, definitely.
Absolutely. Apparently, from what I've been reading, this is the first Godard film I've seen. But it's been referred to as his most mainstream, but yet probably was his best film, too, by a lot of people.
Yeah, it's funny that, you know, people call it so mainstream, because it is an art movie with a capital A. But
absolutely.
And I would say if someone has never seen a Godard movie, this is an excellent one to start
absolutely
with. You know, I think it's his best film myself. It's considered mainstream because it actually does have a narrative, has a, you know, plot that you could follow and characters you like.
Has a first, second, third act.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was shot in CinemaScope, which was a first for him. He'd always done, like, real intimate stuff. And the movie's widescreen, and it's absolutely gorgeous to look at.
Yeah. As far as character development, I'd say if you liked Lost in Translation, it'd actually be pretty close. As far as, because there's not a whole lot that actually happens in the movie.
It is a slow film, admittedly.
But I think that it's because it was taking its time.
Yeah, I think it's quite hypnotic, really, in its power.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I should say that for those who aren't familiar with Godard's whole credo, it's that he, when he started the New Wave film movement, he basically just wanted he was so sick of Hollywood films. He was sick of good guys and bad guys, happy morals, happy endings, just the whole Hollywood formalic stuff. So he began this thing that he called anti-cinema, and it's all throughout Contempt, where the music sometimes cues up and cues down, you know, and at really random times.
Yes, I heard that was because so that they wouldn't be able to overdub it.
Exactly. There's that. He has really random cuts throughout his film. Sometimes the scenes end very abruptly rather than, you know, a really beautiful, neat, you know, screen wipe or screen change. And even the opening credits of this movie, you know, where you've, instead of like, you've got someone basically reading the credits rather than you actually seeing it. Godard does stuff like that all the time, basically to remind you that you're just watching a movie, but also to deconstruct everything you would expect a movie to be.
Absolutely. It really struck me initially because when we talk about quick fade-ins and fade-outs of music, they're sitting at a music audition listening to music and suddenly the sound cuts out and then you hear the dialogue.
Yep.
Which is really interesting, I thought.
Yeah, it's really weird. Now, all of his movies are like that, and this is why he's one of my very favorite directors. Even like, he's done movies that I didn't particularly like and I don't think are especially memorable, but in every single movie he does, he's always doing really playful and inventive stuff like that. So it's like, even if you don't like the movie, you always see something you've never seen done before, ever before, in a Godard film. He's always doing stuff to really break the fourth wall and just really bash the barrier of what is what you've thought a movie can do and convey. And that's why I love this guy so much. He honestly, I mean, you know, I was a kid just trying to see a naked girl in a movie, and and he just blew my mind and introduced me to this world of what cinema was capable of, and really, you know, introducing me to how many rules of cinema that I was used to, how many things I took for granted in films. and how interesting it was to see him take simple things like opening credits and the rhythm of editing and really just make a film an even deeper experience.
I thought it was a very bare film, and you know, emotionally it was just there and it was very real.
Yes.
You know, a lot of films try to do that now, but back then it was all, you know, you're talking like Doris Day, pillow talk type movies,
right.
You know, and there wasn't just this real, very real look to it and feel
yeah.
to it.
Yeah, you're right. It's very raw.
Very much so. It was just kind of like he was leaving himself open emotionally, and it was absolutely amazing, I thought.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, one of his, I mean, his most famous movie is Breathless. That was his first movie. It's sad that he's probably best known still for Breathless, his first movie, which is a great movie, no question. And Breathless has inspired Tarantino. He did a film called The Band of Outsiders, which, of course, really inspired Tarantino. It's also an excellent film. But really, Contempt, I'd say, is his masterpiece. And if you've never seen a Godard film before, this is the one to see.
There you go. And, hey, you want to take a guess at who puts this out on DVD?
I wonder. Could it be Anchor Bay?
Totally. It's a Warner Brothers stripped down version, actually.
That's right. It's a one disc.
Yes, actually.
No trailer.
This is put out by the great Criterion Company. Yeah, this is what, our third movie in a row. Our next one won't be a Criterion film, actually, but this actually, you know, Criterion does really kick ass features. And I'll just read off what they've got. They've got a, let's see, it's got a high definition transfer. It's got an audio commentary by film scholar Robert Stamm.
It's a really good commentary. I've listened to it.
Yeah, I really, you know, it says it's got a new subtitle translation, and I really thought it was a really good translation. Nothing was lost in the translation. I was able to follow what was going on. I really appreciated that. A lot of times when you translate a film, even some of the earlier Criterion film releases were pretty bad, like Seven Samurai, but they re-released it, did a new one, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
There's actually two discs. The second one, let's see here, is this a conversation between Godard and Fritz Lang called The Dinosaur and the Baby. Mm-hmm. It's just over an hour long. It's got two documentaries featuring Godard on the set of Contempt. Let's see here. Bardot at Godard, sorry, my bad, and Paparazzi. So, and then you got an excerpt of an interview with Godard from 1964 and a video interview with cinematographer Raoul Cotard.
Yeah, it's pretty striking stuff. The one with Bardot and Godard is interesting, with Paparazzi, dealing with how it drove him crazy that she was being stalked by Paparazzi throughout the film. And you basically see like all the scenes shot at that gorgeous beachside, basically that mansion that's in the climax of the movie. And you see like people in boats like taking pictures of her while they were shooting the movie. I mean, it's really,
I don't know how
stuff.
They did. Yeah, because I mean, the final shot is a pretty sweeping shot of that water. And I'm kind of surprised that there was no boats or anything.
Yeah.
I wonder if he had to like threaten them with loss of life or something,
or like sick the sharks on them or something. It's such a beautiful sweeping shot. And but yeah, you see the making of, and they were swarming the set.
We haven't mentioned what movie they're making.
Yes,
or they're making The Odyssey, actually the Contempt is actually in many ways a direct adaptation of The Odyssey, mm-hmm. and at least the. Relationship between Odysseus and Penelope. Is that right?
Yes, very good.
Wow, pulled that one out of nowhere.
Good memory, man.
High school history paid off.
Yay.
English class. But I thought it was very interesting, striking how, you know, the director character of Paul, the writer, is talking about the difference between the two and talking about... it's actually Ulysses, isn't it?
Is it?
I
confuse the Iliad with the Odyssey all the time.
I think it's actually Ulysses. I take that back. I'm sorry. Okay. But how that character, you know, treats his wife, and it's exactly how he's treating Camille. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very striking. And, you know, it's funny how you talk about stuff and you're actually talking about yourself. I hate when that happens. So that was very good. I highly recommend picking this up, renting it, whatever. It's well worth watching at least some point.
Definitely, definitely. It's, you know, it's... It's not something you could just kind of throw on and, you know, just watch casually, you know, and it's certainly not something that's, you know, as wildly entertaining as something like Sullivan's Travels. Like I said, it is an art movie with a capital A, but if you enjoy the films of Kubrick, if you enjoy the more artistic films that have been mainstream, like, you know, say, I don't know, Jackie Brown or American Beauty, then this is, you'll certainly see a lot of influences in this film.
Absolutely. And, you know, give another shout out. Every single one of these films that we have, you can actually grab on Netflix as well.
I don't know
about Blockbuster Online, because I've got Netflix. I'm happy with having all the Criterions and stuff. So they're worth checking out as well. So I guess we can go ahead and wrap this bad boy up. Wow, this is like a 15-minute or just about. Cool. Oh, you know, great movies. It's easy to talk about for a while.
That's right.
So shoot us an email. You can hit us at podcast@screengeeks.com. We just like to get a little feedback on if people are really enjoying this or not. And yeah, cool. Until next time, this is Dave.
And Barry.
This is the Screen Geeks Film Snob. And next week we're talking about Badlands.
All right.